Greg thought we were rolling, and we were not rolling, but now we are.
I saw this.
You're blowing wind into your microphone. Cool, there you go, that's better.
This was a little toy. I didn't take a picture.
There was a Mickey Mouse on the top. See, okay. See the Mickey Mouse feet?
Yes, yes.
And Max broke off the Mickey Mouse.
Okay, so your mother bought this for your kids. Your mother-in-law bought this at some sort of...
Disney on Ice.
Disney on Ice. Now, okay, what it is it's a...
It's a tchotchke.
It's a tchotchke. It's got a spinning doohickey. Are you going to vine it?
Oh, I can vine it if
you
would like.
Yeah, you should vine it. Okay, so
you know, we got comments about your 8-bit time, motherfucker.
That's right.
From Father Spoon, from our favorite podcast, shouldidrinkthat.com. Where is Vine?
So this is, okay, so it's a little toy.
Hold on. Vine's opening up. Yeah, then right. I hit this button here. And then, okay, you got 6. Whoa, come on. It like froze. Eh, come on.
Oh, this you have a 4S.
Yes, the darn force. Oh, Vine is not happy.
Well, anyway, so it's got this little turny doohickey. It turns around. It has some lights on it. It's
okay. Now
around.
Now it's going. You got 6 seconds. Make the most of it.
See that?
3, 2, 1, yeah. Go.
There you go. It's spinning. Now it stopped. Now it's spinning again.
There you go. That was the best 6 seconds of your life.
Okay. So the thing that impresses me about this is, okay, so this is obviously a pretty cheap item. It's fully made of plastic. It's got a couple lights on it, and it has a doohickey to spin. I bet these things cost, I don't know, $1 to make. If you bought 1,000, so, you know, 1,000 costs $1,000, and they probably sell them for, what, 20?
They're probably not 20, for like $10.
$10 at least. I can see how this really would attract people, especially kids, at an event. Like, oh my God, that looks so cool.
That's like the 6th or 7th type thing. Of course, now Vine is playing it over and over again because we wouldn't want that on my audio.
Now, I totally see how kids would be attracted to this. It spins around, does cool stuff. But then, of course, when they get home... What the hell do you do with it? Nothing. It doesn't do anything.
You take it apart, and you take the LEDs and the motor out. That is like... Today, I took apart a sword that had the same basic construction.
Right.
Where inside a little globe, it had a spinny thing. It had a whole long string of LEDs. I took all those parts out, and I'm going to, you know, tinker with them.
Right.
And sooner or later, I'm going to take this apart and take the motor out, and take the lights out, take the switch out, because the switches are actually nice switches they use in these. And, sometimes, if the battery case is a nice shape, I'll like cut out the battery case so I can use the battery case again. This one is not worth saving the battery case.
But I mean, other than that, it you know, it's a piece of shit product because it doesn't do anything besides attract people to buy something that is worth a lot less than they actually pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have any use.
Nope.
Other than
taking it apart and using the motor for something more fun.
Other than to attract people. It's very, very interesting.
That you haven't been to any kids. You haven't been to a Yo Gabba Gabba concert or anything, apparently, because this is par for the course.
Now, why would I go to a Yo Gabba Gabba concert?
I'm just saying. You used to, you know, talk highly about Yo Gabba
Gabba. Yeah, but why would I go to a Yo Gabba Gabba concert? I enjoy Yo Gabba Gabba, the TV show, as sort of a, oh, that's, ha-ha, I get it, and it's made by people like me, you know. And then, but that was also before things like Wreck-It Ralph came out, where I was like, okay, mm-hmm. Now the real artists, still people like me who love this stuff, but they're really getting into to the minutia of the things and the fun stuff. So
I'm going crazy. You're, trying to take off the headset.
Headset free.
I know. It is a little loud. It's hurt my ears tonight. I'm not loving it. So no headset for me tonight.
All right. Well, do what you got to do.
Got to do. I'm pretty good staying on mic anyway. So I don't need to really monitor my own levels.
I'll tell you if you're off, but you're fine.
Maybe it's a new leaf. Maybe I'll never, ever use headsets again. Doubtful.
Why?
I don't know. I think we need to get some new headsets, though. I think maybe with some money we'll have to get something a little more comfy.
Speaking of money, Amazon Anonymous.
Oh, shit. I almost forgot. Let's fire this shit up.
All right.
It'll be a complete surprise. I haven't logged in all week and looked at more.
I looked today, and unfortunately, come on, guys. We need more purchases.
Oh, not so good today?
Not so good this week. Oh, now, man. That's why I was so big about saving it, so that saving some items so that we could go back and look at some items in the past so we didn't go through everything. But no, this particular week was not a huge week.
Did you buy more ghee?
I did buy more ghee.
And macadamia oil?
Yes.
Okay.
That was
yeah, me. It's a very... Oh my goodness, that's a pathetic week. Come on, guys. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 items, and two of them were Greg. At least two. And
three
one
them,
was me.
Three of them were me.
Three of them were you and one were me. That was only two referrals this week. I guess our commercials are wearing out.
That's right. Well, that's to be expected.
I was kind of hoping that as we've gotten more and more and more shows with commercials, right? It's not just a point of broadcast type thing, right? People are going to be listening to old shows and like, oh yeah, just kind of ingrained into their consciousness. So I thought it would kind of just kind of keep building. But so yeah, two items this week. You get to pick one, I get to pick the other.
Well,
I guess,
huh? Like I said, I saved it so we could... I saved...
I'm guessing you didn't buy the holistic dog food.
No.
I guess that's my item since I just spoiled it.
We don't have to use this week. That's why I wanted to save all that, is we can go back and look at items.
Oh, I want to talk about the holistic dog food, I guess.
Okay, all right.
Holistic Select Radiant Adult Health Dry Dog Food. Is that even an English sentence?
Yes, apparently.
Okay. Oh, I see. Radiant Adult Health. Okay. This is the lamb meal recipe, 6-pound bag. You could also choose the anchovy sardine salmon meal recipe, or the chicken meal and rice recipe, or the duck meal recipe. I would go with duck.
Why? It's a dog.
Maybe because if it's duck, you might want to try it yourself. It's holistic. I mean, come on.
Which means what?
Better than organic, I guess. I don't know. All right, down to the description. From the manufacturer, head to tail health starts in the middle. It's true. The key to your dog's overall health is through his or her stomach. A healthy digestive system does more than just break down food. It absorbs and transports nutrients to the body, while also eliminating waste. In the absence of good digestion, your pet might not be getting the most from his or her food. It's like yogurt for pets. That's what it says right there.
It wouldn't be my first selling point, but okay.
Prebiotics and probiotics, digestive enzymes, natural fiber, herbs, and botanicals. This is actually a repeat buy. This is the second time we've had this holistic dog food bought, so we appreciate your support.
I wanted to bring up something that
I would almost like to talk to the person about why they buy it, because it's easy to make fun at hippy dippy holistic stuff, but I would love to get the other side of the argument, you know?
Yeah, true. And, you know, I've never owned a dog, so I don't know the whole situation you go through. It may be a dog that has special dietary needs. You mentioned the ghee. I could make ghee on my own by simply buying some butter and making it. Mm-hmm. But I buy this grass-fed ghee that's already made, and because I like the, because I don't know where the butter I get normally comes from, mm-hmm. but I have a guarantee that it's grass fed and organic, and so I appreciate that. you know, for my diet and everything else. Mm-hmm. And sure. And man, have I found that if you do a little bit of a fry with the ghee of some oyster mushrooms before you then add the rest of the stuff for the stew, man, it makes it so good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, ghee's, you know, it takes a little bit of work to make. You don't want to burn it or anything like that. You know, you got to condense it down. But, you know, it's funny, when I first saw that, you know, last time you ordered the ghee, there's almost a disconnect. I hadn't considered, like, ghee is ghee. Take butter, you buy butter at the grocery store. You buy the grocery store brand butter and you boil it down, right? You never think that it actually comes from corn-fed, antibiotic-filled cows, right? You're like, oh, wait a second here. Because you're talking about cows eating something, making milk, milk turning into butter, turning butter into ghee.
Right.
Many steps, right? Which didn't all connect in my head until I saw you ordering grass-fed ghee. I'm like, oh, yeah, they do all connect. No, I hadn't seen that.
So, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, that's the reason why I don't do it myself. If there was a cheap way to get grass-fed butter that then I could turn to ghee that was cheaper than buying the ghee in this way. And there isn't. I mean, I could buy grass-fed butter at Whole Foods, but turning that into ghee, I'd actually get less product out of it than I would.
And it wouldn't be as consistent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring back, this is a couple weeks ago, but somebody bought a Garmin Forerunner 410 GPS-enabled sports watch, which is kind of cool. I guess, you know, so they can measure, you know, how far they've walked or run and all that stuff.
It's not just your casual exercise athlete, though. This is somebody who doesn't want to carry their smartphone on their run, right? Because a smartphone, you would assume, is too heavy.
But, I mean, it's also, this measures your heart rate.
And
so it's got other stuff going on there. So it's kind of cool. And it has, like, it does, like, workout goals. And it, you know, it has extra stuff, which, yeah, you could do with an iPhone that says enable GPS. But it also measures your body stuff and your pulse, I'm sure. So
okay, that makes sense. See, I initially thought that, you know, I mean, there are times where running with this, 5.5 ounce iPhone, it gets heavy, you know, like I typically carry it when I run because it's too big to put in your shorts pocket. Now, if you get one of those armbands, right, that would work pretty well. If you had it like up on your bicep, you know, that wouldn't be too awkward, but you know, getting a lighter than an iPhone sports watch would, you know, certainly be for the hardcore runner. Or if you want, you know, pulse rate built in, because your iPhone can't really measure your pulse without a Bluetooth add-on. And
that would probably, that would cost there's a way that, like, you can put your camera up to your...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there are some apps that do that. You put your camera up to your finger, and you shine on a light, and then you do that, and they can measure your pulse that way.
I wonder if there's an app to measure your dong.
Measure your dong? Okay, Don Draper.
You say, you tell me that joke, and or you use that, and I've never watched an episode of Mad Men.
No, it's because there was a recent story about how people on the Mad Men set are distracted by the fact that Jon Hamm's dick is so huge.
Oh, he has a big dick?
He's got a big dick. He also has a big dick.
Not only is he sexy and appealing,
not only is
and
he amazingly handsome, and you know, and has, you know, this huge amount of confidence, and is also really funny.
Well, where do you think that all came from? His giant dick.
Exactly. That's why. Well, no, I mean, not everybody who's. I mean, I would suspect that most people who are funny don't have very big dicks. It's a compensation thing.
But they're also not as confident as Jon Hamm.
Right, yeah.
When I was... my first job was working at King's... You know, it's a restaurant. Like, I don't even know what a nationwide example would be. You know, I was going to say like Eaton Park, but that's still a regional example.
TJ Fridays.
No, not even. Less.
It's less than that, but I mean...
Denny's.
Yes.
Denny's.
Denny's. There
worked
you go.
At a restaurant, a local regional like Denny's. And there was a regular who would always sit in the front. And the rumor was, he was an old guy, like senior citizen, wore a toupee. And rumor was that this guy had a down to his knee, Johnny Holmes type dick. And so, you know, being teenager, you know, a teenager, you're like, so every time you come in, you'd like be watching him look for bulges and stuff. And I swear the one time I saw a bulge, like down to his knee, like, like this whole tube, like toilet paper, like a paper towel tube going all the way down to his knee.
That seems like more of a hindrance than a help.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're that big, then you're just, you'll never actually be satisfied and just hurt people.
You're probably right, but wouldn't it be nice to know what the pain was like? Or not what the pain was like, what that burden was. Because what I said the first time almost sounded like
you're
on the receiving
side. You never lack for confidence in that sense, right? Because in this weird schism, you know, afraid of sex / obsessed with sex society, we're all obsessed with the size of our cocks and how that relates to us as a man, right? And how that values us as men, which is stupid and absurd. But there it is. And, you know, and you and I are probably not among the large size guys, so we don't have that bit of confidence that comes from that cultural thing. But it's really stupid, and yet here we are, slaves to it. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, we've talked about dicks enough in the post show, like over the history of the show. 121 items ordered on Amazon so far this quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Only two this week that weren't us.
Yeah.
Slackers.
Come on, guys.
No, we seriously do appreciate it. We're just teasing.
Easter's coming up.
Buy some egg dyeing stuff.
I don't
bunnies
know.
Bunnies and chocolate bunnies.
Chocolate bunnies.
Oh, this morning we went to Easter egg hunt and breakfast at Allie's preschool, which is church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't mind. I'm like, I was wondering, like, if they only knew, you know, atheists here taking your free candy. Oh, that was like, they have to Easter egg hunt. They had this little story about Jesus and his death, you know, and like,
the reason for the season.
Reason for the season. I knew you had to go, but let me just finish the story real quick. They're like, why did Jesus suffer up on the cross when he had them work a miracle and get himself down? My answer, like, ooh, because it makes a better story.
Interesting subject to talk about.
All right.
Actually. And relevant.
All right, let's pause it. And we're back.
Okay, so let's get into this Easter story, because I'm sort of two minds about this.
Okay.
From my story structure obsession, initially you look at the Jesus story, and it pretty well fits into a decent story structure. You have a guy who has some sort of need. He goes through a period, and he does the ultimate sacrifice, which is lets himself get killed for his beliefs, and then returns as the master of both worlds to
the original story, huh? Or one of them.
No, I mean it's based on other stories, but I mean it's very mythological, mm-hmm. and it's obviously a mythological story. But if you really think about it, it falls apart because, you know, as a singular human who goes through a trial and gets killed and then gets revered afterwards, fine. As the god creator of all things who turns into human form and gets killed and just resurrects himself because he can, and he's like, psh, well, I'm God. I can do anything I want. It really turns into not a great story at all. You know, so I'm sure it was a better story before all this other crap was thrown around to it, mm-hmm. where there's this monotheistic God that controls everything, and that this Jesus person was a part of this God. Like, if Jesus is not the same thing as God, then it becomes a much better story than if Jesus is the all-powerful creator of the universe in flesh form, because then dying is no big deal to mm-hmm. the all-powerful creator of the universe. Dying as a human is just like, pfft, who cares?
Right.
As a regular human who dies and then is resurrected because of his faith in X, but is still ultimately a regular human, that's a much more powerful story.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I just don't want to rehash the whole, you know.
Well, I'm not getting into religion itself so much as just, you know, the story and the power of the story. And it feels to me like...
if only, Jerry Bruckheimer or someone produced the show, right? Because then, you know, fire and brimstone would be raining down and exploding. And like, you ain't going to nail me up on a cross, motherfucker.
Well, you know, that History Channel story about the History Channel show about the Bible is like really, really popular.
Oh, crazy popular. Yeah. I don't watch it. My mom and sister were talking about, like, oh, it's really good. And the guy, who's the,
producer? Producer of Survivor. Burnett.
Mark Burnett, yeah. And his wife.
But, I mean, my point still stands that as a story based on the idea that this is an all-powerful being that puts a tiny bit of himself or in his entire self into a human and allows himself to suffer pain for a brief period of time, but not really. But yes, but no.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes back and then it's, you know, big. That's nothing. That's you expending a life in a video game. That's the extent of the struggle you went through. In terms of an actual person who went through a personal struggle. I mean, to me, the atheist take, if you were to take the atheist take on the Jesus story and why the Jesus story is an interesting story is the idea that, okay, if you take it at its face value and nothing else, and you assume nothing supernatural. I don't know what Jeff is doing, so he's not listening to me.
I'm listening.
If you take the Jesus story and you assume nothing internet. Right. You take the story, you assume nothing supernatural. And what comes from that? Well, you have a guy in this, you know, oppressive time who is saying things like, you know, be nice to each other, stop classifying people, stop turning the poor into horrible people, and I'm gonna say whatever the fuck I want, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the worst thing you can do to me, the absolute worst thing you can do, is kill me. That's it. That's all you can do. You can kill me. You can do that, but that's it. That's the end of your influence. Once you kill me, you kill me, but my ideas are still around. That's a resonating and interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think the idea is a good story. Because, you know, if you don't assume things like the resurrection or anything like that, you just assume there was an itinerant preacher who is saying all these crazy things against the, you know, the status quo, and he was killed for it. You know, that there's lots of parallels to that in history, but it's a good story. You know, Martin Luther King, or you know, other things like that. You know, rallying against the system and saying, look, you know, the worst thing you can possibly do is kill me, but all that's going to do is make me stronger. All that's going to do is make the power behind my words stronger. So go ahead, kill me.
Right.
Because I care more about the message than I do about my life.
So yeah, it's a strong, it's a good sentiment, and who knows, maybe that's all the sentiment was at the time that it happened, right?
Right.
And all this other crazy magic shit got tacked on. And then this
stuff gets tacked on to it. So is there something of value to the Jesus story? I think absolutely. I think that, you know, there's a reason why it turned into what it is. But you see that pattern throughout history. You see that pattern through different people throughout history. So I'm not going to say that, you know, that it's a unique story or the greatest story ever told, which, especially if you add all the other crap to it, it's a pretty shitty story when it all comes down to it.
Like the story today, like, you know, the night before, and he's praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. He prayed so hard, he was sweating blood. He prayed so hard, he was sweating blood.
That's pretty hard.
That's pretty hard.
It's hardcore.
And it's pretty superfluous.
I mean, yeah, the story of Gethsemane is a very powerful story. And him, you know, questioning himself is a powerful moment. And a valuable moment in any storytelling thing, you know, I doing the right thing?
For sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think as a story, it works very well as long as you don't assume all the other supernatural shit that comes onto it. Once you do that, it turns into a piece of shit story.
Right. We don't like fantasy.
Well, no, it's just that it's not even that we don't like fantasy, because I do like fantasy.
No, you like sci-fi.
No, I like Game of Thrones. Yeah, that's okay. Fantasy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I can appreciate the fantasy as long as the story structure is well done, and as long as the motivations are clear and those sorts of things. Sure. But when you have an all-powerful being that is simply just sort of testing the waters and just sort of playing a Grand Theft Auto simulation, it becomes far less interesting. It becomes something of a farce. I'm going to send a little, you know, piece of me and or all of me down.
Well, it's kind of melodramatic, right? It's kind of trying to, yeah, like, what has the best impact? What is going to pull on humanity to get them to change the most, even though there's really no sacrifice from God, right?
Yeah, there's no actual sacrifice. I mean, you know, okay, he feels pain for 3 days or whatever it is.
Out of 14 billion years.
Yeah. Plus, because he existed before the Big Bang in the narrative, so it's an infinite being who sends a part of himself, which is a... No, I mean, okay, I'm also willing to admit that, look, maybe I just don't understand God. Maybe God is just, you know, far beyond my comprehension and my ability to comprehend. I'm just saying it's a piece of shit story.
I hear you. You know, trying to, like, I think your point where if you distill the story down, you know, there is a compelling story in there, but it's when it's a real person, you know, dying for his conviction, you know,
right,
for his idea that people are, you know, I mean, basically the same thing. Martin Luther King wanted the same thing that, you know, was said in the Declaration of Independence, you
right,
know, those kinds of things, you know, it definitely repeats itself. There was a I forget, one of the public radio shows I was listening to, I forget. But there, you know, guy was talking to his kid, they're talking about Jesus, and they killed Jesus, you know, because of his beliefs and stuff. And, you know, they tied it into Martin Luther King, right? And just the way they produced it was very like, oh, you're like, whoa, little kid, you're thinking really deep, right? But, you know, it's a story, right? It's been done many times to different degrees. And, you know, those aren't the only two times that someone's died for their beliefs. And, you know.
And also the assertion that Jesus was perfect, where we know, like, Martin Luther King wasn't perfect. He was an adulterer and all other stuff. This came out significantly later, but, I mean, it definitely came out. But we still have this, there's still this idea that Jesus was this perfect person, even though this 33 years of his life is unaccounted for. He was born of a virgin. I'm giving Jeff a quizzical, like, yeah, right.
What's one more miracle? They already threw a bunch in. What's one more?
I mean, would you believe that excuse if your daughter came to you?
It probably like, wasn't.
You know, okay, good. 20 years from now, your daughter comes to you and said, well, I never...
I don't expect that the born of a virgin happened at that part of the timeline. That happened much later. Someone's revising the story like, ooh. Look at this rewrite.
Yeah.
How do you like this one?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's gold. Virgin birth. I mean, Joseph's long gone. Who cares if he gets shafted on the whole thing? Let's make him more divine. The Holy Spirit impregnated Mary. Yeah.
How about that?
Dirty
about
fucking
that?
Holy Spirit.
It was not in the earliest stories. It came later. Yeah, I mean, you know, the earliest stories, which probably have some basis in a person of some sort, because there were lots of people around that time who were doing similar things, and there are lots of people who had followings. There are lots of people who were being messianic in that, you know, and this the depths that people go to try to fit this person into this. In, you know, into the line of David and all the other stuff, it makes sense that there probably was a Yeshua at the time who was sort of like this, who then eventually got killed for his beliefs, along with a whole bunch of other people. And just this guy just happened to be the one that was turned into the thing. I mean, I think that makes some sense. I think that, yeah, there probably was a Yeshua who actually existed in some way, but he was nothing like what's presented to us now.
Well, it's like St. Nicholas and Santa Claus, right?
I guess.
Same kind of thing. I mean, you got this guy that, you know, turned into Santa Claus. I mean, most of that.
Or St. Patrick, right? I mean.
Well, there's that. But I mean, think about, you know, for centuries, the story of St. Nicholas was one thing. And then over the last 50 years, it turned completely different, right? You know, so it happens in a heartbeat, right? And, you know, the story of Jesus could have changed over 100 years, you know, just over a generation or two at some point, you know. And it's probably changed several times over generations, or things were just added in. Like I said, you know, someone's rewriting it. You know what would make this much better? A virgin birth. We're going to make this a virgin birth from now on.
And it becomes doctrine, and then it just becomes what's taught to people, and then people then use that as their simulacrum of God, and that turns into...
You know what really punches this up a bit? Resurrection. Motherfucker, let's have him come back in 4. Nah, 4 doesn't sound right. No. 3 days. Three fucking days.
Well, I think resurrection was among the earliest of the doctrines. And the other stuff came later. But, I mean, the resurrection itself is, you know, it's different.
They were burying live people in the 1800s, so, you know.
But no, well, I mean, the resurrection itself is totally different. Like, in one of them, I think it's Mark, not only did Jesus come to life, but a whole bunch of different prophets and other people in Jerusalem came to life. And It's like, and that's not recorded anywhere.
Well, coming back, but I'm saying, come back to life. You know, as late as the 1820s, 1830s, you know, there was a risk of being buried alive. You know, mm-hmm. So maybe he wasn't dead.
that's possible, unlikely, but possible. But most likely, he was dead, and maybe.
I don't know. I don't. I wouldn't pass that off too much. Talking about 2,000 years ago,
right?
We're talking about someone passes out. Do they even know to check for a heartbeat? Do they?
Yeah, sure.
Are you sure about that? Yeah. Are you positive about?
Sure,
that?
It was the Romans. They knew how to check for a heartbeat.
I don't. I don't know. I mean, if you hear about, you know, these grave bells and stuff, like, as late as it was, and they weren't sure people burying people alive. Not sure they put out a lot more grave bells than actual people are buried alive.
I mean, but it's unlikely if you crucify someone that you're waiting for him to just pass out and then you throw him into a grave. I think you leave him up there for a long time. I think he was dead, and maybe. You know, there's a whole bunch of possibilities. One, the entire thing is made up. Two, some people just pulled him out of the grave and, you know, his dead body and tossed him around and said he was alive.
We're getting to Bernie's.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the possibility of him not actually being totally dead is there. But, you know, less likely than the other possible scenarios, when you know what you're either being made up or, you know, like tossed around and or, you know, all types of different situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's we can't go back and check, but okay, the guy was crucified and died. One way or another, he's dead. He's dead.
So here, okay. Can't go back and check. But what if you get, so, you know, speed of light can't go faster than speed of light in vacuum. But the light doesn't always travel at the speed of light. It's traveling through a medium. Right? It can be as low as 25 miles an hour in the right material.
Yeah, but then you're really messing with the information that's actually presented in this. I don't know whether you can.
So what I'm saying is, you get in a spaceship, you fly out around the slow moving material, you find the light that shows Jesus being killed, and you watch it.
Right. So that would. There's a whole lot of problems with that. One, I'm not sure how much information is destroyed in the process of having it being
slowed down.
Slowed down.
Well, I mean, finding the right lens to collect the light into an image of something very small that happened on the Earth, 2,000 light years away, is. But it's theoretically possible, right?
It is theoretically possible, but you have to go.
If you're already there,
you have to go out past. So it would take at least. You know, if you were to do it today, mm-hmm. It would take at least 2,000 years. You know, to go out past there, and then you'd have to find, you know, to go out to a place where you found where it had gone through some material
that slowed it down.
That slowed it down. So, and since we can't go at the speed of light mm-hmm. today, mm-hmm. you'd really be taking 50, 60, 70,000 years plus around, and then around, so even more.
You
so, like,
find something that slowed down for a long time.
Right, right. And then somehow, even though it slowed down information, then it kept that information, didn't destroy that information. So it's a way you can still recover the information, focus it, and then watch it. And then all you'd be seeing would be
the truth.
Well, you'd be seeing, you wouldn't be able to hear anything. You would be simply seeing electromagnetic radiation that reflected off of this from your focus.
Got the right lens, though, it'd be an image of the truth.
If you had some kind of ridiculous lens, yeah, sure, okay, all right. No, I'm with you. I'm with you on the ridiculous proposal, but but it doesn't actually get you anywhere because you can't listen to what people are saying. you know, maybe you can do some lip reading in Aramaic or whatever. But
Aramaic lip reading. That's something to study up on that 70,000 year trip.
Yes. So you've got a lot of hurdles.
But once you get there, you can watch all kinds of shit, right? It's like TV. You just watch all of humanity. Just move the lens around and see what happens. And
I mean, you had to find some material that would slow the light significantly enough for you to get around to it and around from it. And the only material we found that can do this has to be, like, super cooled and you know, really adjusted by lasers and stuff like that. And it doesn't exist naturally. So, good luck. Good luck.
Theoretically possible. Immensely
improbable. Hypothetically possible. I would not say even okay. Theoretically
hypothetically
possible.
Hypothetically possible.
Hypothetically possible. Hypothetically plausible.
Mythbusters finds it plausible.
Yes. It's a rough one. It's a rough
That'd
one.
Be great, Mythbusters on the Jesus story.
Yeah.
Plausible, not busted.
There's actually a YouTube parody of Mythbusters trying to prove God. It's pretty funny because they kind of get the quirks of the individual team members right and really over exaggerate them, but in a good way. So that's funny. Like Mythbusters, I think if you just do YouTube search for Mythbusters proof of God or something like that, it's pretty funny. But the interesting thing about Mythbusters is okay, so four of them are atheists. Four of them are atheist skeptics, and one of them isn't. One of them is a real Jesus-believing big Jesus guy. Guess which one is a Jesus guy?
So, two guesses, right? One is who I feel it should be, and then one is who I think it is because it's unexpected.
Okay.
Right? So I would say Grant is the Jesus believer who it should be, but I think Jamie is the Jesus believer that's unexpected.
And you're wrong on both counts.
Oh, okay.
The Jesus guy is Tori.
Tori. Eh, I see it. I mean, I see it. Okay.
So there you go. Now you know. Everyone else is an atheist. Everyone else is a... And Tori is a reasonable skeptic, so it's not like he's, but he still has that hard spot for Jesus.
That hard spot.
Everyone has their own spots that they are not perfect, and you and I know this about ourselves, and you know, other people. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Tori's not perfect. Whatever. I'm still amused by the show.
Yep.
So, okay, you've been watching The Wire. How far are you on The Wire now?
Season 3, episode... The mental midgetry. 8 to 9, somewhere in there. You know, Amsterdam's running strong. People are starting to find out about Amsterdam. You know, a couple episodes. McNulty and Kima found out about it, and this past episode, the bald black guy, not the cop, but like the guy's confidant, you know, friend, found out about it and just telling him about how it's not better and how that, you know, it's better to dilute hell across all of Baltimore than having one you know, square block. Yes, you know, so that's where I'm at right there. And, you know, there's some predators moving in on Amsterdam, you know, and they just, like, doing Omar-type shit. But, you know, they jacked a couple of the dealers and, you know, tied them up inside. And Omar's like, no, this is some kind of setup. I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna move in on this, even though it's exactly what he should be doing, right? It's what he's best at, you know. Stringer's, you know, I guess, trying to get into politics or something. He gave that that senator aide guy a bunch of money this past episode.
Clay Davis?
Yeah.
She.
Yeah. Yeah, Stringer's trying to evolve, and the other guy. The guy that was in jail. I can't think of his name. The guy they were after in the first season.
Barksdale?
Barksdale, yeah. Avon Barksdale. You know, he's still a gangland thug. And, you know, and Stringer's trying to move beyond that. They're chasing down the throwaway track phones. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay.
Digging it. Don't like the season 3 theme song as much as the season 2 theme song, though. But yeah, it's the same song. They just composed it differently.
Yeah, it's sort of like Weeds, right? They Yeah,
I don't think the season 3 one. It's a little more... I don't know how to describe it. I'd have to listen to it again. I think that's the one you played in the post show, or at the end of the show, wasn't it? Wasn't the season 3 the one?
No,
it
was just the first one.
The same one? Oh, yeah, it sounded different.
I thought you played it. Yeah, I like the season 4 version, I think, the best, but that's just me. Yeah. I like season 4 the best of all The Wire. Right,
so that's why the music has a special spot in your heart.
Yeah.
I'm almost there, almost season 4. And then season 4 will be over, and I'll be watching season 5. Yep. And I know the best is behind me, according to Greg.
According to me. But you can make your own decision.
And then after The Wire, maybe Game of Thrones will be my next thing to pick up. Maybe some Mad Men. I don't know. Those are probably the two highest rated shows I haven't watched. So.
Yeah. Mad Men is a better show than Game of Thrones, but Mad Men is also a more maddening show than Game of Thrones.
Okay.
In the sense that it doesn't follow your... traditional rules of narrative. It's slow and it's deliberate and it doesn't go where you expect it to go.
I'm also not a fan of fantasy. Like, I'm not saying I'm not gonna like Game of Thrones, but like, I can't name anything that's fantastical that I like.
See, I think the interesting thing about Game of Thrones is you know, when you think of fantasy, you think, you know, pure good versus pure evil and those sorts of things. And Game of Thrones is not that at all.
I don't know if it's that. I mean, there's two genres of things I don't like, and that is, you know, fantasy, wizards and knights type. And I don't like
that stuff either.
And generally, I don't like... Now, there's a few exceptions to this one, but generally, I don't like the post-apocalyptic stuff, the Mad Max, the... Escape from L.A., those kinds of
nonsense.
Things.
You love that stuff.
Well, I like... Maybe I don't like the old way they used to do it or something. Mad Max and whatnot. I don't know. It's
you don't like desert dystopia.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a more familiar dystopia you can appreciate.
I think so. You know, the revolution, you know. Revolution could have been better acted and better plotted, but I liked that dystopia as opposed to the desert dystopia. Even if it's not a desert, even if it's an urban desert, you know, I can't get into it.
But isn't Walking Dead that urban desert? I mean, isn't that what it is?
It's too close to current reality that I don't find it there. Like, even Blade Runner, I didn't like Blade Runner. Everyone likes, I mean, it's an amazing movie it's supposed to be. I didn't
Yeah, like, I was not a huge fan of Blade
I don't
Runner
like Blade
either.
Runner. I mean, maybe it's the way off dystopia that I can't get into. Because most of the ones I'm thinking of are, you know, 100 years detached.
I think that it's all about how it's presented, right? I mean, it could be something that you really dislike, and yet if it's presented really well. I'm not a big fan of horror movies, but I love Cabin in the Woods. You know, I'm not a fan of fantasy genre, but mm-hmm. I love Game of Thrones.
I mean, like I said, I'm open to it. It's just there's a predisposition that it's the kind of thing, you know.
But isn't it great when
I mean, even The Hobbit, you know.
I didn't like The Hobbit. I didn't like... I liked the first Lord of the Rings, but I really didn't like the second and third one. I'm sure I wouldn't like The Hobbit if I saw it because of the way I feel about that. In Game of Thrones did not interest me at all in the same way it didn't interest you. And then I keep hearing all these things about it, and I finally watch it, and I loved it. And... You know, I think it's the same with you find that with a lot of situations where it's something where I'm not going to like that, and yet someone pushes you to sit down and watch it, and you're like, oh, okay, this is a lot different than the stuff I'm used to,
right?
And so I think when you find something that is, you know, it's set in the trappings of a particular genre, but it's so much different than what you're used to that you are, you know, that it really bleeds out of its comfort zone, that it makes it much more exceptional and much more interesting.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll have to give it a try. I mean, I got the episodes. I just need to queue them up, but like I said, I'm working through The Wire, and that's another couple months of...
Wire's better.
It's another couple months of stuff to watch, so...
Well, by the time that you're done with The Wire, then the season 3 of Game of Thrones starts. That's the next thing. Mm-hmm. The Game of Thrones music is the next week, and because it starts that Sunday. So,
okay. Do we have another week before we have to do the show, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Good, because I don't want to do it right now.
I have to write some stuff up if I'm going to do what I think we want to do. So, yeah. It's cool.
Okay.
Well,
it's about that time. It's 1:03 in the morning.
We started late, so.
All right. See you all later.
Have a good night.